An Ash Wednesday Sermon, preached by Reverend Richard A. Rem at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 21, 1996, in the series The Experience of God, entitled Home on the Far Side of the Valley. The scripture readings for the sermon are Psalm 23 and John 14, verses 1 through 3. The text for the sermon is Psalm 23, verses 4 and 6. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
Dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. That is the somber reality and the profound truth of our worship this evening. On Ash Wednesday, it is the time when we are faced with our mortality. One of the things that had always been very important to me as a pastor, one of the things I have been very intentional about and very self-conscious about, is never to promise what I can't deliver. And to be as honest as I can about the human situation in my preaching. Because I know that possibly tomorrow I will be called to walk with you through a deep, dark valley. That possibly before the week is over, we will stand face to face, confronted with that tragedy that always stalks our steps. And so I have always been cautious and careful. Because when I am present with you in your moment of darkness, I want to be able to be just the same then as I am now. And I am so grateful for the seasons of the year that lead us through the full spectrum of the life of Jesus, and therefore also our human experience, so that we have on Ash Wednesday an experience like this in which we will be marked by ashes and we will hear the words spoken to us one by one, dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return. We shall all die. I received a book in the mail yesterday. It was a gift from the author. The author is Jerry Sitzer. Jerry Sitzer's father is a member of this congregation. Jerry Sitzer is a professor of religion at Whitworth College in Spokane, Washington, and you may remember the tragedy through which he went about 4.5 years ago, when with his family and his mother-in-law, they were driving home from an event, and they were hit head-on by a speeding car. And Jerry, in all of the pandemonium and the wreckage, saw his mother-in-law die before his eyes, and his wife, and in his arms, his little girl. 3 generations wiped out in a moment, with his other 3 children injured. He wrote a book now after 4 years, a grace disguised, in which he reflects on the experience of loss. And although I haven't had time to read it all by any means, I have skimmed it quickly. And at the beginning of each chapter, he has a quotation. And at, I think, the second chapter, there are these words from C.S. Lewis. Die before you die, for afterwards it is too late. I don't know the source from which those words come. I don't know the context in which C.S. Lewis wrote them. But die before you die says to me that it is healthy and wholesome to contemplate our death and to come to terms with our mortality, and to do that in the midst of our days, in the strength of our days. For there are those who study the human person and speak of these things who tell us that it is finally only when we have accepted the fact of our death that we are really set free to live. So maybe C.S. Lewis's word is a good word for tonight: die before you die. And in this setting of worship in the Christian church, how do we do that? Well, the psalmist, I think, has a good word for us. That beautiful 23rd Psalm that is read at so many points in our pilgrimage. The shepherd psalm that begins, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." That speaks about what the shepherd does for this sheep until the fourth verse, when the psalmist ceases to speak about the shepherd and begins to speak to the shepherd and speaks about going through the valley of the shadow of death, but affirms, "I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." The psalm moves into that personal discourse with the good shepherd, and the confidence that the psalmist has through the deep, dark valley is the presence of the shepherd. They tell us that in the land of Palestine, Israel, where the shepherds abound, that this was a very literal experience, that there were many times that the flock had to be led through what they would call a wadi, a deep ravine, some of them so deep that the sun can never penetrate. And they were places of great danger because, of course, the flock and the shepherd would be vulnerable passing through that narrow passageway between precipitous cliffs on either side, abounding with caves. There were those robber bands that abounded, and the wild animals that infested that desert area. And so what the shepherd speaks of here came very literally out of his experience, the danger. In fact, I read a quote of a modern-day shepherd who spoke of the danger and the fear still that would overtake one moving through these very treacherous passageways. The psalmist wasn't necessarily speaking about death itself, but the valley of the shadow of death has come to speak of those deep, deep dark experiences of our human experience. And ultimately, of course, in our understanding of the psalm over the centuries, to speak of the experience of death itself. And the thing that transformed the experience was the presence of the shepherd, the good shepherd, the Lord. And I find that is characteristic of the scriptures. Sometimes I hear preachers promise more than they can deliver. And as I've said, I've always tried to be very careful about that, to make great claims in triumphalistic manner about how faith lifts us above the storms. It isn't so, friends. There is nothing that is a part of the human experience from which you and I, as the children of God, are immune. There is nothing that is a part of the human scene from which we have any insurance that we will be spared. The Bible never says, believe and be set free from the common lot of humankind. It says rather, through the valley of the shadow of death, do not fear, because the Lord is with us. And the psalm ends in that beautiful note, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Maybe the immediate reference again, the house of the Lord forever, spoke about the Jews' delight in worship, delight in being in the temple or the synagogue, literally the house of the Lord. And yet there was more here too, because the house of the Lord, the Hebrew word is Beth. You will recognize Beth from Bethlehem, the house of bread. But remember when Jacob was fleeing from the wrath of his brother Esau out in the desert and the wilds in the darkness of night, scared to death. He had a dream of the angels descending and ascending to heaven. And he awoke and said, this is none other than the house of the Lord. Out in the midst of the wilderness, in the barrenness of that place so filled with fear for him, he had experienced the presence of God, and he named it Beth-El, the house of God. And so the house of God, or the house of the Lord, is not so much a place as it is a continuing, ongoing presence. I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. I will dwell in the house of the Lord. In other words, in the presence of God. God with me, I with God. That is the transforming reality. That is the place at which we rest our souls. And maybe that was in the mind of Jesus, who called us as well to trust. Let not your hearts be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. Trust me. In my Father's house are many rooms. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you, that where I am, there you may be also. Again, present. The presence. That in which one can trust. A place of many rooms. The English preacher, Leslie Weatherhead, points out that often our thoughts of heaven or what lies beyond are rather static and even boring. But as a matter of fact, he suggests that translation of many rooms is more the idea of an inn, a wayside inn, a stopping off place, a place for rest and refreshment, to enable one to go on with the journey. For who knows what lies beyond? Not necessarily because of any particular passage of Scripture, but more and more as I think and experience, it seems to me that all that we are and all that we experience, all that we can imagine and all that we can dream of, must somehow find its fruition in an ongoing adventure that knows no limit, whose wonder we've not yet begun to conceive of. Paul said something like that, "We walk by faith, not by sight, and it has not, and it does not yet appear to us what God has conceived for those who love Him." And so there is in our Christian faith that resource that enables us tonight to kneel, to receive the ashes, and to hear that word, "Dust thou art, and to dust thou shalt return." And then to arise and to take the bread and the cup as a sign of the eternal covenant of God's grace, who is with us here through deep, dark valleys, at the depth of human experience as well as at its height, but who assures us that that presence is never interrupted, but will find expression in ways that we've not yet dreamed of in the eternal adventure of the sheep and the shepherd. That's the transformation of the darkness that enables us to live in the light, even in the presence of the darkness. Monday, we gathered in worship to celebrate the life of Roger Jacobs. And through those final days, Peter and Bob were there with him. A few weeks before, we gathered in worship to celebrate the life of John Closter, and I was able to be there to witness his last breaths. And while I was gone, in a moment, Hal Dyke was gone, and once again, the Christian community gathered. And who is to say how sharp the loss, how deep the pain? As I read the pages of Jerry Sitzer's witness, I realized that it must be true as he was writing. I cannot even express my own grief. Then how can I fully enter into the grief of another? But this, as your pastors will witness to you, and you have experienced it too in this community of faith, the darkness is real, but the light continues to scatter the darkness. The pain and the loss is real, But there is a trust and a love that transforms the suffering and the loss and moves us again into the light. We can hear the word, receive the ashes, and then take bread and cup with a grand nevertheless. This is the true test of the soul's romance with God. To hear the words and to say nevertheless is to be free, really to live.